This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back. Wow, what a massive week of sport that we've had. Very fortunate that the world has come back, despite the world shutting down in Australia, but the world of sport is definitely back, alive and well. There's probably a few points to touch on. It could have been a massive, massive weekend for Italy. They obviously won the Euro, and then Berrettini, who versus Novak in the final of Wimbledon, almost won. No, he didn't. He got smoked. Novak is, as much as I hate him, and I genuinely hate him. I would be rude to him on the street. He's just so good. He's just unbelievably good. It's rare that you get a sports star at the top of his game and, like, honestly on track to being one of the greatest of all time. And so hated.
It's
very rare. It is very rare. Like, you think about the Michael Jordans, Tiger Woods and stuff. Like, they've had their controversies and stuff, obviously, that people don't like them. But someone who's so universally hated, like Novak, is pretty rare.
His home country likes him, right?
Obviously. Yeah, they love him. Yeah, they fucking love him. But he,
that'd be really impressive.
Like, a lot of tennis fans hate him.
Yeah.
A lot of the purists hate him.
Even non-tennis fans dislike him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite impressive.
Like, he does a lot of things to make people not like him. But yeah, it's just, it's incredibly shocking how someone that good. I guess it's because he's being always compared to Roger Federer, right? Who is so loved.
Perfect.
And it's like, fuck, we got like the worst replacement here. Like, everyone was happy to settle for Nadal. People like Nadal, but like, people hate Djokovic, you know? It's just one of those things. Like, it's kind of like, you know, Rich Froning was more loved than Matt Fraser.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, Matt Fraser's like, whatever, he's not that bad compared to, he's not like everyone hates him, you know what I mean? It's like, he's kind of a nothing.
Trying to think of another sport. I guess, maybe Mike Tyson.
Oh, you reckon people hated him?
Yeah, like, rape case.
Mm.
Maybe, I guess he wasn't on top of his
game.
No,
but then, I guess, like, he didn't, yeah.
A lot of people didn't like him.
Yeah, yeah. But he was still loved by a lot.
Definitely on the back end of his game, a lot of people didn't like him. He was, like, going crazy at press conferences.
Yeah, but he still had a lot of love from a lot of people around the world. I guess Floyd Mayweather, in some ways.
Nah. Since he became bad boy, not quite the same.
Yeah, nah, it's not that hate though. It's just like, oh, he's a bit of a dickhead sometimes. Yeah, I don't know. But then I guess, speaking of other people that people hate, is like McGregor for on the weekend. You know, it's an interesting phenomenon when, I don't know if anyone listening to this watches it or cares or saw it, but we're gonna talk about it anyway. Snapped his shin. So up until this point, I think we talked about the snap shin a few weeks ago or a few months ago when it happened again, but it's a pretty rare injury. It's only happened 4 times in the UFC. But what's crazy is it's happened so close together, these last two. Whereas the ones before, it was like they were years apart, right? It was very rare. And I was speaking to my brother about it, and I was like, oh, why do you think this happened? Because I was like, you go down the rabbit hole of people trying to figure out how it happened, right? Doctors like analyzing it and stuff. Every single kick in the fight, there's like a still shot of it and that. And when I was putting the pieces together in my investigation, I noticed that in the embedded, which is like the behind the scenes and the lead up to it, he was icing his legs and he was doing ice and hot therapy.
You got your own theory on it.
Yeah. Well, you just never see it.
Yeah.
You just never see guys icing their legs into training. I'm sure their legs are sore from kicking.
So what are you saying? He had an injury?
Well, yeah. And then his coach came out and said, look, we had a scan. There was like a bit of an injury in the thing. We had a scan. Everything seemed fine. It was just really sore, but I think likely what happened is, and I don't know, I'm not a bone expert, so I'd love to get some kind of doctor on. I listen to a lot of doctors on YouTube talk about it, but still, I'm always skeptical. But what I imagine happened, and this is what my brother was saying, is like his shin was just too weak, right? So in order to throw that kick, in comparison to how he wanted to use the leg in that fight, he changed his strategy going into the second fight, or the third fight, I should say. And he was like, all right, I'm going to go leg kick heavy attack. But if you haven't been doing that, my brother's like, if you haven't been doing that for years and years and years and years, that kind of kicking, to then throw it at that force continuously all through a training camp as well, right? Because going from zero, and it's like, cool, this is our new weapon in the fight, let's throw it heaps, he would have weakened it in training camp. So the way the bone gets stronger, obviously, is like you'd be doing that all year round, and then it would be like redensifying or whatever, and then getting stronger, and then going back, and it gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah, and they've proven that, right? Like, if you keep bashing a joint, it lays down more calcification.
Whereas if you look at a guy like Israel, who throws it all the time, he's throwing it all the time, and he was a kickboxer. Mm. So like they throw kickboxers throw that all the time, right? That's why you don't get that many shin breaks in kickboxing, because they've been throwing that for years and years and years and years, right? Decades. So their shins are really tough. Whereas Conor, that's not a huge part of his attacks. He's like throws a lot of spinning kicks, like a lot of different kicks, but not a lot of shin kicks. And yeah, it might have just been the volume of it going into the camp, compounded by the fact that you add the force and the adrenaline that you're throwing at it in the fight. It's already weak, that you just fracture it. And then, I mean, guys would fracture their shins. We've seen it. Guys fracture their shins all the time. They don't get a clean snap, right? They get a fracture. The clean snap generally happens when, like, you know, they check it. So it's like kick. Yeah,
hits the shin.
Yeah, they kind of check it, rotate their shin out, and it snaps on the shin. But his might have just been a compounding... it's still a freak accident. That's the thing. It's still a freak accident. But I guess when you walk back and you look at all the clues leading to the outcome, you kind of think, okay, well, yeah, it wasn't like completely freak. It's still a freak accident. This chance of it happening is still low, but yeah, it sucks. But on a broader scale, I think...
Maybe he needed more collagen protein powder.
I think so. trueprotein.com.au/collagen. The real reason I think that it's disappointing, whether you like McGregor or not, because like, you know, lots of people were like, oh, so glad that he got injured. Like, he deserves everything that's coming to him. That's what you get, blah, blah, blah. And then other people are like, it's the most devastating thing to happen to like the face of MMA. I think it just, you know, whether you're a McGregor fan or not, regardless, is it's worse for the sport. That's just the bottom line. The bottom line, at the end of the day, this guy...
But they come back from this.
He can come back. Yeah. Yeah, he can come back. Look, it's just...
He would have had time off anyway.
Like, yeah.
If he just lost the fight.
Yeah, it's just... Anytime he's losing, like... It's just not good for the sport. And when something like that happens, it's just not good for the sport. Because he brings in, I don't know if you saw this video. It's called like the business of Conor McGregor. They played it in the week leading up. And it was like a bunch of like casino owners and like private jet captains and like airport people. Like just different economies or different businesses within the Las Vegas economy talking about what happens on McGregor weekend. And they're just being interviewed one by one. And they're like, the amount of money that it brings in that week is like insane. Mm. Insane. The guys, one of the people say when the private jet airport on McGregor weekend, they need to send out a notification to everyone that's flying in about how long the delays are going to be, because so many private jets fly in on the McGregor weekend. So yeah, they got rooms that said that like one of the casinos was like, yeah, he's their top room that is like $6,000 a night doubles. For the week, doubles, $12,000 a night. And he's like, they're all booked out. Don't even try and get one. Yeah, it's crazy. So he just brings that excitement to the sport that no other fighter can bring to the mainstream public. For me, I can get excited over any card, right? Because I follow the sport. But I think what makes it exciting for me is when I see everyone else who's not into the sport start getting into the sport. And some people don't like that. They're like, oh, you're not a purist. You don't like the sport. You don't understand it. I get that. But at the end of the day, more people watching the sport, more people into it, it's better. It's always better for the sport. And then Dana came out and made some claims like, oh, you know, he's trying to become like the biggest sport in the world or whatever. I just don't think that's going to happen.
He's trying to make the sport the biggest.
He's like, he came out and said, oh, you know, some of the older sports in the world have been, you know, they've been asleep at the wheel for a while. And he's like, I look forward to the pleasure of like overtaking them and becoming the biggest sport in the world, which is great. Like, I think he's a savage. He's a super ambitious guy. It's not gonna be bigger than football. It's just not. Yeah.
Yeah, hard to say, particularly when the fight's over because this dude's ankle is like split in half.
Yeah. Some people like that.
Yeah, not the majority.
Mm. But turning our attention to football, did you watch the Euro?
I didn't watch the whole game. I saw the highlights of the game.
Yeah. I watched the end. I turned it on at like 6 o'clock, so I watched like the end of the second half and penalties. Man, just going, like, I'm just so glad when I watch that I'm just not into football anymore.
Yeah.
Because when you're so invested in a side and you have to watch penalty shootouts, I remember the last time I watched a penalty shootout which I cared about, which was Chelsea versus Man United for Chelsea's first Champions League. And John Terry, it was raining. John Terry had the winning kick. He slipped and he missed the penalty to win. Then they lost. I was so devastated. I couldn't go to school for a week. And I had to turn my phone off because people were blasting me, like talking shit, like, you suck, we're going to burn you when you get here, like crazy shit. It's so devastating that when I was watching that, I would have hated to be an Englishman into football.
Like, yeah, it's
devastation.
It's absolutely
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Watching it is painful. The only time I really had that was, I don't know if you remember, when Australia made the World Cup and then we progressed a long way through.
In football or yeah. rugby?
No, in football.
Yeah.
And we got to, where do we get to? Out of the pool stage?
Yeah, yeah. We versed Italy.
We versed Italy. Is that quarterfinals?
Round of 16.
Yeah, 16. Yep. Yeah. Eighths, whatever.
Yeah, and there was a penalty. Yeah,
they had a penalty shootout.
That was fucked.
And that was, we were at Circular Quay and it's absolutely going off.
Oh, you were out for that?
Yeah. It was so late. It must have been like, because I remember the light, like the sun was coming up once the game finished.
Yes.
So it was probably a 4 a.m.
Yeah, the game started.
4 a.m. game.
The game started in the dark.
Like, Australia went completely nuts. It was 4 a.m. and like the streets were packed.
We did really good.
Unbelievably well. And they went on, I think they went on to win the World Cup.
No, they didn't.
They got to the final.
I think they got to the final, yeah.
They got to the final.
Was it one? Was it? It was 1-1.
Yeah.
And then it was 2-1 on the
on the penalties. And I just remember that. And as soon as the game finished, I realized that's why there's so much violence in football. Because the game finished, I was like, oh, we need to break some shit. Like, someone's going through a window.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you feel so, I don't know, it's just like a weird feeling of like being robbed.
Have you heard that saying, which is like, soccer or football is a game played by gentlemen, watched by thugs, and rugby is a game played by thugs, watched by gentlemen?
It's hooligans. Yeah,
hooligans. But, man, after seeing that, I can't help but think it's true. Did you see some of the videos circulating around the English fans?
Nuts, yeah.
Disgrace, man.
Yeah, that was just one. Disgusting.
I don't know if you watched it, but there was this one that was going around and it was absolutely tragic. And anyone that's English in Australia was like, I'm trying to distance myself as far as possible of being associated with being English right now. Because there was this one in Wembley, because what they've done, which is kind of silly, is they've separated the fans, right? So all of Italy sitting
in this section. I think it's silly. I think it's like life and death. You have to separate them.
Well, I think if they were all dispersed through the crowd, do you think it would be worse?
I think in football, like, I don't go to these games, but I think in football, they're
might
like,
be worse.
You have to separate them.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. But anyway, there was like that one of the exits for the gates for the Italian fans, and there was just a bunch of English people waiting outside the gates, just ready to bash them. And then the Italian people were just sprinting, trying to make it through. And this guy, like old guys, man, like guys like my dad, like an English guy like my dad, just there, like throwing haymakers and shit at the Italians coming out, kicking them on the floor. Like, it's a fucking disgrace. Absolute disgrace. But it happens all the time.
Yeah. They are truly disgusting.
Yeah. I just don't know. I don't know why it's necessary. I guess, you know, you're upset, but fuck, you lost. You know, you'd be upset at the players. They're the ones who can't fucking kick a penalty in. So, you know.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw, I watched I can't remember his name, the like very black looking guy who missed the...
The first penalty? Rashford?
Yeah, Rashford.
Yeah. Where he like did the little stutter step and then he missed it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, devastating.
Bad penalty. But when they lose, it's just... It actually was hard to look even at the TV screen.
Yeah. No, it is heartbreaking. I mean, one thing I hope they do in the future, I don't know if there actually is anything about it, but I've heard a lot of good things about England's manager, Gareth Southgate. He's like quite a like inspirational kind of leader character. Apparently, he's got really good speeches and stuff, and he like his players love him. His players love him. I don't know. He was copying a lot of shit at the start of the cup, but I think anytime it just goes bad, English fans just like turn on whoever they can. But I've heard he's I'd be interested if he has like a biography or something.
They
or
need
a documentary.
I feel like they would need after that game just immediately a counselor sitting in the change room.
Yeah.
And those players just go directly from the penalty shootout
100%.
Into this counselor's office 100%. And then just stay there for 9 hours. Until they are like non-suicidal to live.
It's like you after Shark Tank. No, it's because that kid that missed the last penalty, he's 19.
Yeah.
He's 19. But yeah, like
that
right at the end.
Too much for a 19-year-old.
Oh, man. Like right at the end, Southgate was like, he had the 19-year-old. He was like one-on-one with him. Everyone's going nuts. And he was like speaking to him. And he's like holding his head. He's like, whatever he was saying to him, he's probably like, don't kill yourself.
I don't know what he said. He's probably like, he should have kicked it a bit higher.
I told you to go to the left. Why did you go to the right?
Do you remember when I said left?
I'm going to kick your fucking
ass. Which bit of left did you not understand?
You fucking idiot. Oh, shit. Yeah, but penalties is a devastating way to lose. A devastating way to lose. I don't know. I don't have many Italian friends, but I'm sure Italy would be. I mean, after the year that they've had, I mean, England's had a rough year as well, but the joy that it would bring to that sort of country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they had a particularly rough one.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see how it goes in the future. But what's this I hear about? We beat the USA in basketball. Did you watch it? Hear about this?
Didn't watch it.
No, I didn't watch it either. But I mean, I just don't think sometimes USA care. They just don't put up like their best squad.
They'd like, never care.
Yeah. There was that year where they had like a crazy team with like Kobe and Dwayne Wade and like LeBron James and stuff.
They've done the all-star teams a few times.
Yeah, and they've done it. But I just don't think it's like that important. But Australia is getting better at basketball. Like, we're a decent nation of basketball. Never going to be great.
No.
But, like, for a small country, we get a decent amount of players in, I would say.
Like, we're the size of California, and we'll never be as good as California in basketball.
Probably not. Yeah. Well, if we can beat USA, like, you know, friendly, that's pretty good. But, yeah, anyways, it was a big week for sport. I mean, probably worth noting as well, Ash Barty won Wimbledon, which is amazing. She is really, in terms of Australian sporting people right now, she is our best sporting... She's like the number one Australian sporting person right now. There's no
one... She's our best sportsman.
Yeah. There's no one else that we can turn to right now who is like more reliable and, you know, the top of their sport.
Just watching this now. Australia did beat the USA.
Yeah.
It's in a warm-up series for the Tokyo Olympics.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Second time ever we've beaten them.
When does In Las Vegas. The Olympics starts pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting. But anyway, so we've been... We've obviously had a bit of a change of our situation.
They even had Kevin Durant play. How did they lose?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's an embarrassment.
That is embarrassing. Maybe they didn't care.
Yeah.
I've been starting this marathon program, and you know, I changed my running style. Completely got rid of my knee pain, which is amazing. So I feel like really good when I'm running now. And I think I was telling you, first time I've consistently been able to run at the right, correct pace and also have the correct heart rate as well. I know there's no correct heart rate,
yeah.
But typically when I run at a certain speed, my heart struggles to stay below 170 beats per minute. But now I can consistently stay under 150. I think it's less to do with fitness and it's more just to do with my running technique. I think it's just more efficient now. I get into that place where if I do a 15, 20 minute run, I would say pretty much every stride I'm thinking about my running technique. And then when I'm doing these longer runs, like for an hour, I really don't think about my technique at all. It's just happening more naturally. And I think that when I switch off from my technique and like every strike trying to be perfect, then my heart rate's able to come down and relax a lot more. So I'm getting a lot of efficiencies, but now my back is fucked. I get like a sharp pain in my back. I think it's like the impact.
Well, the efficiencies never stop. I don't remember when we had Iron Cowboy on for the first time when he was doing his first 50 for 50.
Yeah.
And he was doing his marathons. Like he wasn't walking. He was jogging his marathons. They weren't obviously fast, but they were faster than the second time around he did it. And he kept his heart rate at 115.
Yeah. Yeah.
His bike was 105. Run was 115. That is quite psycho. Most people go to 115, you know, just getting in the elevator.
Yeah. I think because obviously your brain controls so much of your energy expenditure and that. I think that because we're so used to short work periods of time, that when it comes to long periods of time, you almost need a different like mental state. Because if you're like too switched on, you're thinking about it too much. Because that's what you do when you lift weights. You want to think about it more, right? Because you want to tune in more. You don't really want to switch off. But if you can tune out more, you create more efficiencies. I think you allow your body to do what it needs to do. So I think that a lot of the improvements are coming from just mentally being able to go to like just more of a relaxed state.
That's also because the program gives you a lot of running at a slower pace.
Yeah.
So you're not having to like check your watch. I'm like, fuck, got to speed up again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we teach when we do rowing. They always talk about like, hey, one of the best ways to get better at rowing, which is pretty similar to running, is like you would just row on the water for a long time. Like, oh, just go enjoy your rowing. Because you need that time where you're like switched off, you're not racing, you're not trying to get better, that, yeah, you could learn to row and still row reasonably fast, but your heart rate would be really low.
Yeah, the adrenaline, basically no adrenaline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No worries, you can learn to switch off and like you may be only going 20% slower than normal, but your heart rate's like 30% lower than normal. Yeah,
that's a lot of what used to happen when I used to swim. You know, they would just get in there and you would just like swim and just do some cruisy laps. They used to call it junk miles. They reckoned it wasn't like, it was just a bit of a waste.
Yeah.
But it does, I mean, obviously at some point, you know, there's wasteful energy. But yeah, when you're getting in and you're relaxed, it was usually at the end of a session that, all right, guys, cool down for 20 minutes or whatever. And you weren't really thinking about it. You were just kind of like, oh, what's next in my day? I'm going to whatever this time, going to school and thinking about the next subject and just cruising. It just felt effortless. And you're gliding through the water and you weren't looking at the time, but you know, you were still moving like the whole time. You weren't really thinking about it. But the second it's like, oh, I'm in a race or I'm a time or the adrenaline kicks in. I don't know if you remember, we had Andrew Lauterstein ages ago, the Olympic silver medalist against Phelps or bronze medal?
Bronze medal.
Bronze medal. And he said, the second I try to swim faster, I go slower. He goes, but my body knows what to do. So I just allow it to run faster. So, you know, I will be interested to see when it comes to the 5 minute pace on the day, if I can hold it for the marathon.
Yeah, and I think that is probably particularly the case for swimming, but it really goes for all the endurance sports.
Do you reckon I've set the... Because I didn't say, like, I want to run a marathon in this time. I just gave them my 10, like, a rough 10K pace.
No, it'll work out.
That's roughly... Yeah,
it works out. Because the other way doesn't really work, where you're like, this is my goal. You have to work off your abilities.
Okay.
And that gets you in, like, the best state possible, but...
Okay.
You'll be able to do that time. I think you'll go faster.
Yeah, okay.
But that's... Those programs don't make any sense. If you're like, here's my goal, you just work backwards from that. Not really. You have to work off where you are actually at now.
Yeah. And just improve. Yeah. And just see how much you can improve.
It's like, oh, my back squat's 100. Goal's 200. Work off 200.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I that's true. Yeah. I don't know. I think, I feel like it's always hard to know because there's like from 5:30 to 6 minutes, it's like not that. I mean, there's difference, obviously 30 seconds difference, but the effort is so minimal. But from 5:30 to 5, it's like exponentially harder. Yeah. So I'm sitting at like a 5:30 pace and I'm like, this is all day. For an hour, I'm like, I could eat dinner right now. I'm just cruising so much. I'm barely breathing. My heart rates are like 130. But I'm like, all right, but if you go to 5 minutes, like is it all of a sudden? I'm like, this is way harder. So it's hard to know. I think I only really know once I do that. There's one day it's like 30Ks, right?
Yeah.
End of the program.
2 weeks before. Oh, you know, by the end, there's like some two and a half hours.
Okay.
2 hours 20. Yeah. Then you know.
But at the pace of the marathon?
Yeah. No, slightly slower.
Slightly slower.
But you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's probably as fast as you would go when like not on a race day.
Yeah. Because
you're not really going to replicate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's probably like if I said go run 2.5, like you'd probably run similar to that.
Mm. Yeah, I think the real tricky part now is just teaching myself to stay calm and relaxed on the day and just not... Because I feel like the temptation would be the first 20Ks is you just like run ahead of pace and you're like, fuck, I'm killing it.
I think everybody does that.
Yeah. And then you pay for it.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking like, do you bank as much time ahead of pace as possible and then just expect there's going to be a crash at the end and hold on? Or do you like build slowly? Do you hold the pace the whole time?
I think you should just go for... They should have a pacer.
Yeah.
Try and find the pacer. Maybe like one pacer faster than what you want to do.
Mm.
See how long you can stay with this dude.
I feel like you want to bank half the race ahead of pace. Expect a small dip towards the end. And then in that last sort of 2-3 Ks, like really push.
Also, when you haven't done something before, I think you are on the side of faster because you're not really sure what you're capable of.
Yeah, exactly.
If you go a bit slow, you'd be like, ah, that was a bit annoying. Got to do it all again.
The last thing you want to do is have 10 Ks left and have to catch everything up and be in a worse
state. You're better off being slightly ahead. I had to pull back.
Yeah.
Than...
I'm behind.
When it's your first one.
Yeah. 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 No, 100%. So it'll be interesting how we go.
How long have you got now?
Well, I'm only on week 3.
But when is the actual marathon?
I think it's in November. But fuck, we're in this lockdown. I might end up just running it around Centennial. Who knows?
Yeah, you got to stick to the date.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll run it lighter than you are now?
Yeah, I'm not really thinking about my weight, but I look at the calorie expenditure on these runs and I haven't really changed my food. I'm probably going to lose some weight, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I'll probably... I'm like burning...
Very, very common.
Sometimes you're burning anywhere between 800 to 1,200 calories.
Even when I did the running program, I lost some weight.
Yeah. So, I expect I'll probably go down a little bit, but I'm doing the strength training. But
If you just add in like hours of running a week, it's hard.
But the strength training that keeps the weight on you, like the back squats or the heavy legs and stuff. Like you can't do that training.
Yeah.
So it's like, if anything, I think I'll lose a bit of weight in my legs just because I like can't really do... I can do like a little bit of lunging and accessory work and stuff. But yeah, I can't lift heavy on the lower body or it just my running just gets slow. It's not too bad now just because like it's slow. I don't have to run that fast, but it just makes it more miserable.
Well, I had an experiment on the weekend because I did a run with a friend. So I have basically, since my 30K run in the vest, I haven't run at all. Maybe done like 2 runs max, right?
Yeah.
Nothing long. Just like, you know, regular training, we do 400s, whatever. Haven't touched the vest once. That's just been in the back of the garage. And then his friend was like, oh, we're going to do this run because he'd lost weight. So it was a 15. It basically was the same weight as what I did the previous time. 15 kilo run, 15 kilometers. And all I had done was heaps of... So I'm trying to get my knee better. So shin work and calf work, which is usually...
Is this the knee you injured in the stairs?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've just been doing heaps of knee work and shin work and calf work. And usually that's where I struggle. And I haven't done any running. I thought I would struggle a ton and be really, really sore. But actually, it was fine. So I really do think... I think particularly for me, I benefit because I've always struggled with shin splints. I've always struggled with like weak calves, massive thighs. But I think for a lot of people that is into gym training, don't realize how much stronger you are from the knee to the hip than you are from the knee to the ankle. Mm. That is like a crazy imbalance.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen in the upper body.
Mm.
If you think about it, like you train your biceps and your triceps.
Yeah.
You know, and you just don't get that same differentiation below the elbow. Because I think in the lower body, I have that absolutely nuts. So basically in this period, I haven't been able to squat, haven't been able to do this, like the gym's been shut, haven't been able to use heavy barbells, also because of the injury. Done heaps of shin and calf work, and I feel like I pulled up way, way better.
And yeah, it's because you don't grip anything with your feet, right? Whereas you grip heaps of stuff with your hands.
Exactly.
So your forearms are constantly loaded.
They get yoked. Yeah. They get yoked just naturally in the training.
Yeah.
Whereas it doesn't happen with your calves, particularly I think your soleus as well, which is like you have to train with bent leg. I used to always get soleus injuries when I played sports as well from like hill running and stuff like that. And I've just been hammering that. I even bought the shin machine for home.
Oh, the monkey grip?
Nah, it's like a PVC thing. You put your toes in and you lift your toes up.
Actual machine or you just made it homemade?
No, I bought it, but the guy's clearly homemade it that I bought it
off. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a brand name. It's, he's put it together.
Yeah.
On eBay. But yeah, it's worked incredibly, incredibly well.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's tons of value in that ankle work, and maybe Connor needs that program or that machine. Anyway, so guys, this is actually probably a pretty good one for now. You know, I'll tell you what's really funny, right? So there was this meme that I saw going around in the very first lockdown, and it was like, if she stopped shaving her legs, she wasn't doing it for you. I thought that was really funny. It's because it's like people, it's just a meme about people's girlfriends, right?
I get it. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I always think about it like, fuck, imagine if you read that and you're all of a sudden your partner's like not grooming themselves properly and you're like, fuck. Yeah, it really wasn't for me.
That is funny.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that wasn't the situation for me. But I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, it's like probably pretty important to maintain your grooming. But a lot of people just get lazy with it in a lockdown. So I guess for anyone in
Sydney. But also their hairdressers are closed.
Yeah. But I mean, for anyone in Sydney, now is like a really good time. We've reactivated a small campaign with Manscaped. You guys know that they've been on the show before. I think now is like a great time to start taking care of your downstairs grooming as a guy. Like, it's just one of those things that they have the surveys and shit on it. You know, GQ and stuff, they do it. It's like 86% of girls prefer guys that are Manscaped. So I have I don't know why in this lockdown.
Particularly in lockdown, because there's not many people that you need to keep on site.
Yeah.
But when you're locked down at home in your apartment, Mrs. is probably one of them.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, if you're not doing it now, then, and you got a partner, you got a girlfriend or male partner, if you're gay, then like it's going to be obvious that you're not doing it for them. So now, if you care about them, it's a great time to start. So it's usually at our link, themymuscleproject.com/manscaped. They've still got the 3.0 trimmer. I'm still using it.
I still use mine all the time. Yeah. The best thing about it is that
waterproof.
The waterproof is fantastic. Just the battery life. I think the battery life.
Oh yeah, it's long.
It's not long. It's months.
Yeah.
It's so hard to not lose your charger.
Yeah.
It's like because I put mine into storage.
Your charger. Yeah.
I was like, I won't need this in my renovation, and I ran out of battery. And it's, you get, if you use it, you know, a few times a week, you'll get two months easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And we love it. And still got the creams, the gels, and I've been using them each time I groom. So, man, it lasts for ages. It's a worthwhile investment. Okay. Listener questions.
Name is Effort is a Choice. Good question. Thoughts on products or necessity of EPA, DHA, omega-3 vitamin supplements like krill oil or wild-caught salmon? I wouldn't call salmon a supplement, but curious after looking at hundreds of products, which would be the best? Also, any knowledge bombs about suggested volume per day based on literature?
Man, I feel like I went through this fish oil phase like eight years ago.
So, for sure, fish oil has fallen out of fashion as much as it was. It was incredibly in fashion for a period where, like, I know the peak of the craziness was when there was that recommendation from like Glenn Penley, I think, the now deceased weightlifting coach, who had this thing was like, if you get like a knee injury, just try like 100 of the tablets a day. I don't know if you remember this. I think John North did. It was like literally like 100, like 100 of those pills of the, because you can't, I mean, it's just fat, right? You can't really OD.
Yeah. Or so, you can turn your shit to liquid.
That's about the biggest tank you can get. It's not like having Panadols. So definitely the hype, I think, was overrated, and the hype is pulled away a bit. An interesting thing we'll note was when we had David Sellermeyer on, there was like all this good stuff coming out about omega-3 with heart disease, and he's like, I don't know why, but very consistently in the studies, salmon is really good for heart disease. Taking omega-3 doesn't seem to do very much.
Mm.
And we think it is the omega-3, but there's something else that's happening which is not coming across when you just take the omega-3.
Right.
So, something interesting to know, and I think that has been a pretty common thing, which is like salmon's really good for you, just supplementing with omega-3s is not life-changing.
Yeah, so I rode the hype of it being really good for you, and I started taking it and stuff, but the reason I stopped is because when you started looking into it and the quality of the oil, is it became extremely hard and extremely expensive to get reliable fish oil.
And often they would become rotten.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Rotten in the tub. Even a good one could be rotten.
Exactly.
You had to cut it open and smell it just to like check if they were rotten.
Yeah, like they need to be stored at a certain temperature. Yeah. They need to be stored in a certain type of container. They need to be like sealed in a certain type of pill because like if the pill's too clear, it gets too much light, it oxidizes, it goes off. So there's all this fucking mess around fish oil and I realized it's just too difficult. It's way easier just to eat fish once a week. And you only need to eat a fatty piece of fish once a week. You don't need to take it every day. Like omegas you have to take every day. That's annoying. Fish you just eat once a week. So what I started doing is I just put a piece of salmon in my like really nice salmon from, I would not get salmon from the farm caught salmon from Woolies. I know this is Seaspiracy thing came out, but it was even just before that. I just looked at it. It just looked like gross fish and it said farmed and I just wasn't for farmed anyway. So I just go and get like a really nice piece of salmon wild caught from, what are they fucking called? Not the fish and chip shop. It's not like what's the fish butcher called? What are they called? Do they have a name? Fish butcher?
The fish shop?
Nah, they got a name for it. Fuck. Anyway, whatever it's called. So I go to the proper place to get the seafood and man, it's way better. And I just do that once a week. And I think that's as far as you need to go on it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I remember I used to have all the omega-3 tablets. A, they're not very enjoyable to take. B, I had the rotten experience, like really turns you off if you haven't noticed. Like one of the grossest things that is on the planet. And you realize that you could be putting those pills into your stomach. You wouldn't realize this whole time. I just have salmon every single week. Mm. And that is, I think, a much better solution for most people than trying to take the pills.
Fish market? Is that what it's called?
I'll tell you one thing for sure. It doesn't cure injuries. That's the biggest disappointment. When you like have knee pain, you're like, oh, dude, just take him some omega-3s.
Well, shit like cure cancer and stuff like that. No, that doesn't happen. No.
Okay. Next question is Nick Thornton. How do you keep your routine when everything is completely changed?
Matt, it's a good question. I'll start with our recent experience. I assume this is a bit of a Sydney question, but obviously, I don't like talking about the lockdown because everyone's sick of hearing about it. But in terms of just like changing routines when your routine gets thrown out the window, I actually think one of the best things I've been able to do is keep using Habit List, which was like something I picked up from the 75 Hard program. Because 75 Hard, one of the things that was really good is like there was a list you had to tick off every day, the same things to do. And what's important to recognize is at the end of every day, there are a certain amount of things or certain things that you know you need to do to feel like, okay, I got these done today. I feel really good about the day. Everything else I missed doesn't matter. I still got these things done. And I think I've talked about this before, but like, for example, there's, you know, one workout, there's a cold shower on there, you know, there's reach out to a certain amount of clients, loads of different things. So a bit of professional stuff, a bit of personal stuff, all mixed in together. And it's not a crazy list, but it's enough to have to, you can't just ignore it and leave it for the end of the day. Stuff you have to work on all through the day. Because what you realize is sometimes your routine is you're going to be a fucking nightmare, right? Mm. It's never going to be perfect. I mean, you'll get rhythms, you'll go through ebbs and flows, right? You'll find a nice rhythm for a month. Every day, wake up, same thing, really productive, making good progress. And then shit will hit the fan. And it won't always be a lockdown, right? Maybe you move house or maybe you change jobs or maybe someone gets sick that you know, so you have to start looking after them or whatever. Or I don't know, maybe you break your ankle or some shit, right? And then you've got a different routine now. You can't get around as much. So if you have certain things like that on there that you need to get done, I almost think that's in some ways better than the routine because you just figure out a way to get these things done no matter what happens. And that's kind of what 75 Hard taught us as well. That's what it did teach us is like, yes, you'll fall into a rhythm with a routine on some things, but then there'll be the days where you're out of routine, like just say the weekend, for example, and you still have to get those same things done. So I would look at it a different way is not about getting the routine back that you've lost, but instead, what are the really important things you want to get done in the day, personal and professional? Write them on a list, put them in an app, and make sure they get ticked off no matter what. And that way, it's not about the routine. Yeah, sometimes it's easier in a routine, but then sometimes it's like, okay, I'm going to have to build a new routine around these things. And that I find is, and ticking that off in that process has been like really good for my productivity.
Yeah, just so when everything's changed, it's a great opportunity because you can leave the routines you didn't like about what you had before, But it's one of the best times. Yeah, you can just look back. Oh, what were like the four or five things in that routine I really don't want to lose?
Mm.
And you put them in. Man, the amount of conversation I've had with people, I mean, we work in fitness, it's not surprising, but who lost routine in the last 18 months and regret it so much, that it is critical that you make a huge effort when things change to keep your good habits. Because what you realize that you generally, if you just leave it alone, you'll just pick up more bad habits and you'll lose the good ones. That's like the general just life. Way easier to pick up bad habits than good habits. So when everything changes, you get locked down on some big change like that, you might pick up some good ones. But I think on average, if you just let things go as they go, you'll pick up more bad ones than good ones. That's just like a bit of a fact of life. You have to be proactive to put in the good ones.
Yeah. And it's going to be a struggle, right? It's going to be hard to drop the bad ones because they're easy. And it's going to take more effort to instill the good habits. And that's just a part of what separates people that are good at what they do and people that suck, you know? So you just got to put up with that. It's not going to be easy. You're just going to like, so like when you diet, you're going to have to be hungry. So it's just part of it and just work through it.
Maddie McCarthy, keeping up strength and gains without having access to weights and the gym. I'll answer this because I think for the upper body, this is really easy because everybody knows you can do gymnastics, right? You can do push-ups, you can do handstands, you can do pull-ups. Everyone can buy a pull-upper, right? And it's like easy to load. I think the harder thing for me,
find a pull-upper.
Yeah, it's always been training lower body when you don't. I've had a bit of that recently because it's just not as natural, right? You're like, oh, you need some loading, like body weight squat. It's not quite the same as putting heavy weights on your back. And I think what I've done this time is just realize there are a lot of pretty good hard body weight, lower body movements that I can do that are still challenging, you know, in some way. So like I posted, I was doing like natural glute ham raises in the house, chuck a couch on top of you, someone sits on the couch, lock your ankles under. And it's still like a really hard exercise. Like I can only do like, I can do zero of them, really. Yeah. So it's actually above my
too hard.
Yeah, but it's like too hard already. But even assisted ones, right? I can only do like a few assisted reps. So there is some really good stuff like that with the lower body, even like hip flexor work with the lower body, single leg calf work with the lower body. It's like, you know, just no weights is basically too hard for me already. Even like some single leg squat work, it's like if I can load that with like 5 to 10 kilos, I'm basically at the heaviest weight I would do, even if I was in the gym, if I'm squatting on one leg. And I think that's probably the mindset I've had to have recently, is realize that there is a lot of hard lower body stuff that I can barely do.
Yeah.
That is a body weight. Whereas before I was always like, oh, I need weights for the legs and upper body is cool.
Yeah. I would, on top of that, everything you said, I would chuck in heel sprints. It's like sometimes you lose explosiveness as well if you're not doing explosive movements. And most people's explosive movements go as far as like a fast deadlift, right? Or like maybe a clean or something. But it's good to keep some explosive strength as well, like some athleticism. And I wouldn't necessarily go straight to sprinting on flats if you haven't. Instead, I'd go to sprinting uphills, just a little bit less impact on the body. But yeah, if you just build up explosive strength by sprinting up hills, like you'll keep a lot of leg strength. Like it requires strong legs to explode up a decent sized hill. Like a really slight incline is 100%. Probably not good, but a steep hill, like if you're sprinting up that hill, like it takes a lot of force to propel yourself up that hill.
Yeah, you can easily be putting up more force through your hamstrings sprinting up a hill than on like a controlled single leg squat.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd find a really steep hill and I would just, you know, do sets of hill sprints, and that's your cardio in as well. You know.
Lena Sarji. How do you stay on top of tracking a calorie deficit?
Is that a trick question? How do you stay on top of tracking by tracking it? I don't understand the question. Can you read it again? How do you stay on top of tracking a calorie deficit?
Tracking/calorie deficit. I think you mean...
How do you stay on top of tracking?
Yeah, of tracking. Yeah. How do you stay on top of the tracking for a calorie deficit? I think that's what you mean.
Yeah, okay. Well, obviously, establish what your number is for a calorie deficit. Pretty straightforward. If you don't know, it's maintenance calories. If you don't know what maintenance calories are, if you haven't been putting on weight or losing weight for a long time, you're on maintenance calories. So whatever you're eating day to day, measure that. If you want to get really accurate, you can scan it and weigh it and separate it and do all that. Or you can just kind of roughly eyeball it to give you a rough idea. And then take, usually the number is like 20%. Depends how fast you want to lose weight, but start with a 20% deficit, which is, you know, if you're on 2,000 calories, that's 400 calorie deficit. So you start on 1,600 calories and then you just track it and then go from there. It's just easier to keep a consistent amount of foods. Generally, what I would do in something like MyFitnessPal is do all the foods. Like, so one of the things I get my clients to do is they'll take a bunch of different photos of their food and I'll ask them, okay, which of these foods are like the most common things that you're eating? And then I'll get them to build out those meals and save them as meals in MyFitnessPal. So they just have a rough idea, okay. Because, you know, generally eat kind of the same 15, 20 foods throughout a week. if that. And then if you just save all those foods in MyFitnessPal, then it's your go-to food. You go in and you just click it. It's already there. You've already, you know, got the proportions and weighed it out and everything already. And it's just really quick and easy, and it gives you a good idea. And that's just like it's a learning process. Like our friend James, he says, you know, it's like tracing paper. Mm. You know, you use it at the start to learn how to draw, but eventually you take the tracing paper away. And that's just how tracking is. So get good at it for a week, 2 weeks, and then eventually you won't need it as much.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. So you just save the regular meals and then bang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It is hard though. I will say, I think for a lot of people, yeah, it takes effort. It's not something that, maybe in the future they'll have the technology for it, but it's not a thing where it's like, oh, this will be really easy, like 5 minute investment a day.
Well, I just always toss up, how did you get yourself into this predicament in the first place? Because people are like, well, I think there's this thing in their head, like the natural fallacy, right? Oh, it just doesn't feel natural to track food. Why should I have to track food? Well, we also didn't have skyscrapers. We also didn't have like Teslas. We also didn't have phones. And we also didn't manufacture entire stores like an Easy Mart. When I look at an Easy Mart, I'm like, okay, if we all disappeared for 50 years and came back, most of the stuff in this store is still edible. Mm. You know what I mean? Like the milk products and stuff would go off, but assuming the refrigeration stayed on, most of the stuff stays pretty edible. So I'm like, we didn't have those. You didn't just have giant collections of processed calories that basically are infinitely tasty and very cheap and accessible, staring you down at the face everywhere you walk on every street corner. So that's like part of the battle. We need like these modern tools like tracking to battle, you know, the modern conveniences of easy, cheap, tasty processed calories. So people that kick up a stink about, oh, well, you know, I don't want to track, it's weird, it's this, it's that. I'm like, well, you got yourself into this predicament in the first place where you got fat. So it's like, this is just a tool that we know that lots of people use, millions of people use every day, that is helpful to go out of it. Otherwise, you can just go back to a more simplistic approach, which is like, cool, zero processed foods, only whole foods, you know, mainly meats and vegetables, and I want you to walk every day. I don't want you to touch fucking cakes or calories. I think that's harder, you know, because they're like, well, I don't want to give up my cakes and my chocolate and this and that. I'm like, all right, well, we need to track.
Yeah.
All right, now you've said, okay, I need to track, because you need to understand when I eat this cake, it's going to be really tasty, so I must limit it to 200 calories, whatever that looks like, right? So it's like you can't really have the best of both worlds. You can't just like eyeball like really tasty, sugary, delicious foods and then just kind of hope to lose weight at the same time. You need tracking. That's how it works.
Yeah, it's the vehicle to still being able to eat what you like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, last question. Strange handle here for the question she's got. Emma loves carrots.
Mm.
I'm trying to eat cleaner and less processed stuff.
Mostly carrots?
Maybe she's trying to convince herself.
Like, Emma loves broccoli.
Every day, she's like, nah, put a new one
in there. Emma hates sugar.
It's a good question. I would say one of the best things you could do here
is... Sorry, what was the question?
It's just how to start eating cleaner and less processed stuff.
Yeah.
Is learning how to cook.
Mm.
You've got to find a way that you can make stuff at home. That is like the key here. And I think you fall in the worst habits when you do no cooking at home. That's when it's like, you just shit hits the fan, right? And you end up eating all processed foods. And obviously, you can still stay in shape eating processed foods 24/7, but it's not ideal long-term.
Mm.
So learning, either you're going to learn how to cook and you're going to really get into it. I didn't really want to do that. If you don't want to do that, then you want to get into like all the cooking hacks, which is like air fryers and slow cookers and pre-prepared stuff that you can make it really easy. You almost got to go one of those two routes.
Yeah. Well, what I did, I haven't done this for a while, but I changed my Muscle Chef, which is the pre-made meals company. I just changed it to all the ones that are basically don't have processed ingredients in them. So it's like just meats.
Yep.
And vegetables pretty much. And so I don't really get the ones like the noodles or the rice or the lasagnas and the spaghettis and stuff.
Some of them are just, not very healthy.
Yeah. Because I realize I'm like, oh, they're just not good fuel, those foods anyway. Like they're okay. Like in terms, they're calorie controlled, so it's fine in terms of that perspective. So I'm not going to get fat eating them. But in terms of how they make me feel, I just don't feel great when I eat them. And I think that's just a process that happens over time. I think when you're younger, you eat a lot of those foods and it doesn't really affect you as much. But as you get older, there are just like changes in your microbiome where you just feel better on healthy foods. And so what I was realizing is I was heating up these foods and I'd get rid of all the rice, you know, and I'm like, oh, I feel way better when I just eat the broccolini and the thinger. So if you want to go down the ultra convenience road and not learn to cook at all, I would say that when you choose those pre-made meal companies, go for the ones that don't have a lot of the processed ingredients in them, because it's really easy to eat more rice and noodles and stuff like that because it's really tasty, right? But if you get the ones that are a little bit more simplified and they just, you know, maybe just got some pepper on it and like a little bit of seasoning, they're generally better and they'll satisfy you just as much and it's cleaner. Yeah. But not, it doesn't make, like you said, doesn't, you can eat processed foods all the time and still lose weight. It's just harder.
Yeah. It's not as good. So I would employ you. The air fryer is one that I didn't have in the past that I really highly recommend now. I don't know if you ever use one.
No.
So they're pretty unreal.
Yeah.
It's like an oven.
Okay.
It's like an oven, except
plugs into a PowerPoint.
Yeah. And it takes minutes.
Okay.
And it's easy to clean.
So what do you put in there?
Like any vegetables or whatever. Anything that you could imagine, like maybe you'd oven or you'd fry.
Okay, so walk me through. You put it in, turn it on. As I say, you're doing broccoli and greens.
Yeah, so you just like chuck it all in the machine.
Yeah.
And
put a lid on it or something?
Yeah, you just like slide it back into the machine.
Put oil in or something?
Yeah, you can like spray oil or whatever. And then it's like, but some of it's like 8 minutes.
So what is it? Is it just like heat? Like a...
Yeah, I think it's just like really hot air and a really small... Because like an oven is huge, right? So it takes like an hour and a half.
Right.
Because it's such a big...
So it's like an oven.
It's like an... Yeah,
okay, it's like, so it's not like a deep fryer.
No. So it's not unhealthy food. It's very healthy.
That's what I was thinking of. Oh, okay, here we go.
It's like this. So you can obviously make unhealthy food in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, right.
More, it's the time and the cleaning and everything and just the simplicity of it. You can basically put anything you want in there and it comes out fried. And they're very cheap.
How much is an air fryer?
I think it was like maybe $150.
It's kind of like a shitty Thermomix,
right? Yeah, $150.
Yeah.
No, it's not like a Thermomix. It doesn't blend it.
No, Thermomix is like does all sorts of stuff. Thermomix is like an all-in-one thing. You can do loads of shit. Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, right.
So it's healthy. It's like a really healthy way to eat, obviously.
Yeah.
You can't make it less healthy if you just put some oil
into it. Well, ovening is really healthy.
Yeah. Except, you know, there's like way more cleaning with oven. It takes about 5 times as long. So it's like just being able to make like enough food for 2 people or enough food. Because these things are not huge. They're small.
Okay, so here's if I'm making vegetables and salmon, how long does that usually take for the air fryer?
I think it's like, I think if you put
15 minutes.
If you put everything in all at once, it'd be like up to 20 minutes, but...
That's it?
Yeah, it's really quick, dude.
Under an hour.
Oh, it's often like 10 to 15 minutes.
Holy shit, you changed my life, bro.
Yeah, so this has been a new one. I'm talking about with some of the clients at the gym as
How'd you find out about it?
My brother has one. It's gone fully nuts, We borrowed it.
Oh, he would have got one on his diet thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, it's when you get into dieting, you get into this type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And... Yeah, I think it's like the new, very popular thing. It's like the new age slow cooker.
Right.
Obviously, the opposite of a slow cooker. It's incredibly fast.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wouldn't go down the route of getting the cheapest one you could find. I think that's going to, you're going to regret that. I would get a decent one.
Yeah.
You got the $120 one?
You've got that one? Is it good? Yeah, right.
That's, it actually looks pretty nice. Yeah.
We're looking at $120 for 7-liter air fryer on Kmart. So if we run out of air fryers in Sydney, I'll fucking know why. It's this stupid podcast. Ruin all the good shit for us.
No, that's it. Yeah, I really, if you like, don't, it's not, okay, this is not to make like restaurant quality food. This is like, get it done, get it quick.
Yeah, which, you know, sometimes that's what it is. You know, I will say, I was actually getting trolled a bit on LinkedIn and I put up a post about these pre-made meals. I put a photo of it and I was like, you know, 5 reasons why I love pre-made meals. And I wrote it. And if, for those of you that don't use LinkedIn regularly or as much as we do, it's like Facebook in a lot of ways. And this woman's, I can't remember exactly what she said, but, she was like, oh, you know, she was ultimate high horse about it.
Yeah.
She was like, okay, so I would never put that kind of rubbish in my body. I respect myself too much. Food is not just fuel. Food is like an art form and a taste experience or whatever. And she's like, yeah, and then there's obviously the environmental thing, which is hard to argue the environmental thing. So
you mean the plastic?
Yeah, the amount of plastic, right? Yeah, which I get and I kind of left that point, but I said to him, like, you know, it's clearly someone who has never had a pre-made meal before. You would not say that if you've had these pre-made meals, because I guarantee you, if I put one of these things in a microwave, heat it up, put it in a bowl, put a little bit of salt, little pepper on it, whatever, served it to you and say, cool, what do you think of this meal? And you had it, you'd be like, wow, it's really good. Mm. Like, how'd you do that? Cool. That's a fucking microwave contender. You've clearly, you're so entitled and you're so special that you've never had one of these things before. And now you feel entitled to critique it without ever trying it. And I told them, like, this is stupid. You need to go out and try it. So she didn't reply back to me, obviously. just like the people that, you know, I put up a post about lockdown and then I had some, first time ever, I had some like anti-vax. Mm. It wasn't necessarily anti-vax, but they were like not pro-vaccination. They weren't like, you know, vaccines are going to kill us, whatever. They were like, you should stay in your lane talking about vaccines. I was like, all right, look, just give it a rest. But
they're like, and while you're at it, don't talk about premium meals. Idiot.
But yeah, there's definitely some hate coming online. But I got to tell you, those pre-made meals, like, that's life-changing stuff.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I definitely think that if you can take a pre-made meal, someone's like, I'm not eating that. You put it on a plate, separate the food out nicely,
100%.
Improve the presentation. I was like, dude, That's something I can get around.
That was unbelievable.
Finally, something civilized.
You can cook, man. You can really cook. If you want to take it to the next level, man, all you got to do is take it out of the plastic, dump it in a fry pan with a little bit of oil.
Dump in the air fryer.
And like just crisp it up a little bit. And there's no way from that entire range of foods that you can put in a fry pan with a bit of oil and cook it up, make it crispy with some salt and say that it tastes bad.
Yeah.
I'll slap the shit out of you. Your standards are so high that you must be eating at 5-star restaurants every day to not enjoy something like that. So it's come such a long way. That comment was just ridiculous. I couldn't believe she said that. She clearly just never tried it. A couple admin things before we jump into the review. First thing, In the Black is now moving to its own podcast channel. So we're going to keep In the Black rolling on this channel for the next couple months, but eventually it will transition over to a new channel. And I think we're just calling it In the Black Gym Podcast or something like that. You'll see it.
If you haven't listened to it, this is the fitness business show we do.
Yes.
On Fridays.
So that is becoming its own podcast, which you guys will go follow. It'll stay on here for a while, but then eventually we're going to move them all across and we'll probably delete all the ones on here and move them all across to that In the Black channel if you want to see that there. So that's the first thing. The second thing, the event that we're talking about for gym owners as well. After everything that's gone down, we'll probably put that on pause till the start of next year. We're still, I still got to figure out what's happening there. But unlikely we're going to do it towards the end of this year, just because it's so hard to know what's happening with these restrictions and the lockdown and stuff now. And travel just doesn't seem like a good idea domestically. So probably going to have more details on that later, but likely going to push it to the start of next year. All right. So before we jump into the review today, as you guys know, there's a couple of things that we do really well. And one of the things is we always buy premium gear for the gym. One of the most premium things that you can do, or one of the things that are not premium in most gyms, is mobility gear. And it's a shame because mobility gear is like one of those things that it's really useful for people to roll out, stretch out, open their joints up, loosen up tight spots. Most people sit at a desk all day, and most gyms just kind of throw a couple balls in the corner in a bucket with a roller or a dowel or whatever, and they don't really give the members the experience they could with the barbells and the dumbbells and the rigs and the rollers and stuff. So to make everything consistent, we highly recommend using Blackroll. Blackroll make premium mobility gear. It's engineered in Germany. They use different composites and technologies and materials that you don't find in normal mobility gear. So definitely check that out. You guys will notice a big difference in terms of the quality and just how it looks as well. And it's still at a really affordable price, and everything is fully recyclable as well. So guys, check it out at themymuscleproject.com/blackroll is where you can check it out. Okay, so I looked at a few things this week. I've got two things. One, I started The Walking Dead. Obviously, very ultra.
Mm.
It's like, finished the first season, 10 fucking seasons, but...
Oh, you're starting from the very beginning.
Well, I don't think I'll get all the way through, because what I've heard is it gets really shit towards the end. So, I'll probably just go to whatever season is like the good season, and then once I realize I'm in the bad season, it's kind of like Vikings. I don't know if you've watched Vikings, it's got like 8 seasons. It's like the first 4 seasons are awesome, and then it gets really shit, and you basically just turn it off. It gets hard, right?
They've been in a zombie apocalypse now for 12 years.
Oh, it's 12? Yeah. So that was the thing. I was trying to predict how old the first season is, because it's old.
2010.
Yeah. It feels old. It's a really good show. I'm definitely getting into that. It's just a perfect mix of like character development, story, and just blood and guts, just like shotguns. And it's cool because you get to like zombie games are some of the best video games, right? So you get to kind of see your video game play out. It's like, oh, this is this character. He's got these weapons.
Yeah.
This is this character. And he's got these weapons. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that kind of playing out. I do like zombie movies as well. So it's cool to have like a full season. Like I basically watch all the zombie movies. So it's nice to have like a proper, series where they're just like slaying zombies constantly. I just love those scenes where they get on like a machine gun and they just mow down tons of zombies. Like that is the scene I'm waiting for.
Yeah, there's something inherent about zombies which humans love to watch. Like the idea of it, people are like, oh, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like, dead walking around.
Well, it's funny in the first season.
And then you kill them again.
What's funny in the first season is the CDC, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, CDC. I know about you guys. But they, spoiler alert, they explode in the first season. So they shut everything down. But there's a good scene in there at the end. And he's like, we're creating like diseases here that could like wipe out humanity. You don't want this stuff getting out. He's like, strains of like Ebola and strains of like bird flu and stuff. And I'm like, and coronavirus. And it got leaked. So... I mean, it's true. It's what those labs do, right? Is they manufacture viruses that they predict will wipe out humanity or large parts of humanity, and they try and preempt vaccines about it. Because, you know, people think that we started this vaccine from scratch. Like, there were already versions of this vaccine for different coronaviruses already. We just had to adapt it to this new one. And that's what you'd hope. You don't want to be just sitting around waiting for, wonder when we're going to get wiped out by a deadly disease. No, you want these places, like, you know, creating, building vaccines and stuff. Obviously, just, I don't know if it leaked or not. We're not going to have that debate. But the point is, these places exist, and that's what they do. They create viruses, obviously, to, like, create early vaccines for them and stuff. So, yes, it's interesting. And I was like, this is kind of what's happening now. So, that was good. So, Walking Dead so far. I've only watched the first season. Finished it last night, first season. I'm going to give it
Surely you won't get through 12 years of this.
No. I heard he gets shit at the end anyway. Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 so far. I feel like it's going to get a lot better in the next few seasons. I feel like it's a good setup. You know, when you create a season about zombies, I think there's only so much budget and investment you put into it. Because it's got some really bad CGI in it, like when the thing explodes. But I feel like as it gets more popular, it gets more money and more attention, the seasons will get better. Yeah.
See the money rolling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What have you got?
Nothing to review. Okay. Mainly because all the sport was on this weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Guys, before we let you go, we've got programs as well. If you're stuck in lockdown, we've got dumbbell programs for you. And if you've got access to a gym, we've got our full programs as well. All of those programs you can find at themindmuscleproject.com/programs. And this month in July, you'll win a Whoop, free month of Whoop. If you make a purchase, you go into the draw to win that Whoop band. So make sure you check it out, guys. Again, themindmuscleproject.com/programs, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the Mind Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the Mind Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.